When you say censorship, it doesn't come always from the government. It comes from your family, from your society, you know, like from your, could be friends. So I like this contrast already, like building something really beautiful by like using many colors, but still talking about the really deep, maybe sad subjects like censorship.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is the artist Ezra Gülmen. Hi, Ezra.
Hi, Johann.
So, Ezra, you are living in Berlin, but you are from Turkish descent. So you were born and raised in Turkey. And my main focus in this series of conversations is how did my guests get into art? How artists saw the possibility of becoming professional artists or creators? Same. So what was your first touch point with art and the possibility to work in arts?
Yeah, it was a long process for me because I'm not coming from a really very educated and privileged family in Turkey. So my father used to be an elementary school teacher. Then he opened a small store, like selling household stuff like fabrics. My mom was a homemaker. We are five siblings, and I was the first kid to study in university. So I knew that I wanted to become an artist, but I didn't know how to convince my family to study fine arts. So within the fine arts, I chose as a department like interior architecture because it was more easy to convince my family to study it because, you know, it has architecture in it. So it was more convincing for my family. But luckily, it was a Bauhaus school in Istanbul. So the program was designed by German professors, Tatbiki. It was founded in 1957, so it was a great platform for me while studying architecture to explore different artistic disciplines. And because you know that it is based on integrating different disciplines and against hierarchy in art and based on basic art education. So it was a great place for me to explore different materials or disciplines and mediums.
So you were the youngest sibling?
No, I'm the middle finger, I would say. I'm the third kid.
Okay. So, and then this was more convincing because it had some sort of applied approach in it, which was more job promising.
Yeah, it's not like painting. And I spent many years by feeling sad about it, that, oh, I wish I had studied painting, that I would have become more artist, you know, like. But now I see the advantages of studying architecture because now I can more easily like think about more dimensional, or I started doing more site-specific work or more functional like my CSOF right now. So now I'm just seeing the advantages of it, to be honest.
But what I'm interested in is also the step before, like how, when you say that art didn't play a big role in your family culture, how did you come in touch with art anyway?
It's an interesting question. I don't know. You know, it's just a cliche that you always say, oh, since I was a kid, I was always painting. But to be honest, my family used to think I was going to be a musical artist because I used to sing a lot. I used to sing a lot when I studied, like when I was going to elementary school. My school teacher discovered my talent, I would say, and he always made me to be part of competitions in the city, like between schools. So this is actually my elementary school supported me through this journey or talent, I would say. And while studying architecture, I was always making illustrations and paintings, but I didn't know how to earn my life out of it. I had no example or role model in my life. And in Turkey, it feels like art belongs to these privileged families or the kids of these families, you know. So my family, my father, I said, he used to be a tradesman. So he always had money problems, you know, cash, bank loans, or, you know, like, and I'm more like a German. I need security. So that's why it was important for me to have a secure salary to feel secure. So after finishing my school, I got employed as a professor assistant, research assistant in the same department in the university. So I worked as a government employee actually for 3 years. So it was important for me to have the secure salary thing. Yeah, so this is, you know, like when I was having this security, the salary, And then, like, seeing this full-time work as my side work, I was always doing art. But it took me many years to finally earn my life out of it.
Mm-hmm. When do you think you sort of developed your own language that you thought, okay, then you found your practice?
Yeah. After working in the university for 3 years, actually, I fell in love and I moved to Germany for my ex-partner back then, like, to Frankfurt. And, you know, one day I was an academic. The day after, I had no working permission because back then in Germany, when you go somewhere with your partner, you were not allowed to work for like 6 months. And I was crying every day. I was cooking Turkish food at food and I didn't know what to do, you know. And my partner back then used to work for an advertising agency, Ogilvy, in Frankfurt. So he introduced me to the design department chef, Helmut, back then. And then I just found myself there working as a designer because I didn't know how to earn money and how to, you know, keep my visa. And, you know, so many artists used to work in different areas to earn money. But I found myself in an advertising agency as a designer. So, and by mistake, I made also actually good career in 10 years. I never thought I would, you know, like it was not my dream of being a creative director, being a jury in Cannes, things like that. But it happened. It's good. But I always wanted to do just art, like 100%. It took me 10 years.
Mm-hmm. But interesting, the other day, there was a woman next to me in the airplane who's a professional musician, but instead of using her skills in the same field, you know, as a studio musician, she's working in a bar because she doesn't want to mix her sort of creative potential with, you know, her creative potential is saved for her own practice, but you sort of put your creative potential into this advertising company.
Yeah.
And did that feel conflicted?
Yeah, of course. And it was a big contradiction, but it was kind of like feeling misfit in the environment because they always saw me as an artist, you know, like in every, you know, as far. But I was always approaching my work with an artistic soul. I think it was good because my work then became really distinctive from others. But on the other hand, it was a great platform to feel misfit. But on the other hand, nourished yourself by the creativity around you because there are many creative people around you, also really annoying. You know, I generally feed my creativity, like when I feel really frustrated or annoyed by others or problems around me. So in this case, I think Verbier Agenturs are great places for it, like full of big egos and, you know, but also really creative people. So I think it was okay.
You work a lot with text, that you play with text. For example, you did these whips on the roof of Bundeskunsthalle, where it says, on one side it says hate and the other one love. Or I don't, maybe you can take us through it and name some examples.
Yeah, I always like to think conceptually. So that's why in this case, like being in an advertising agency and giving your idea like super directly and reduced way, I think it was a great place for me to learn it at some point. I was not a copywriter or something. I was a designer, but still, you know,
how to send your message that it will be received, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And in the most shortcut way. I think it is important. But I think my writing skills also came from my family is like really patriarchal and they come from Eastern Turkey. So my father is a really authoritative figure. So, you know, in this kind of families, the grandfather is really important, followed by father. So the men are strong. So it was really difficult for me to talk about my ideas or confront with them. So that's why I used to talk about my problems or opinions by writing letters in the same household with my father. I used to write letters, really short letters, and just I used to just leave them in his room. So this is how I started communicating with my, you know, like about my problems. So the writing was always in my life. And, you know, when you see my work, it looks someone like in Linz during my institutional show last year, he asked if I was a rebel as a kid because my work.
Who did ask you? Weidinger?
No, a journalist actually. And I said, no, I was not a rebel because but I always confronted with my family in a most easygoing way. I did what I wanted to do without making them sad. So I think it also somehow built my artistic language now.
But I mean, they were supporting you, huh? Also your father, they were supporting you in your decision?
Yeah, I always like find a way, for example, even like studying in architecture, then he supported me. You know, like I always found a way that we could get along, or I had to hide so many things from them.
But I must say, I've heard that here before, another female artist here, Annette Kem, photographer, if I remember correctly, first she told her parents that she's studying on Lehramt, you know, to become an art teacher, which was not really precise. But, you know, then it gives more confidence too. But I had the same with my father. Even he said to me very dry, maybe something less visual would be better because I couldn't see. Maybe it's better to do something which is not so visually connected. But to bring it back to context, so you had this museum exhibition in the museum in Linz. What did you do there? What did you show there?
It was my first institutional solo show. I was invited by Alfred Weidinger and curated by Maria Wenzel. The title is I Was, I Am. It was about my self-transformation. And I was really into these contradictions, like that I'm also, that you see on my Wippe, like teeter totters. It was about my self journey through like autobiographical lenses, I would say. And initially, I wanted to talk about all these contradictions, about our daily lives, global contradictions. And there was this interactive sculptures, the seesaws, like seven of them, questioning whether it is monogamy, polygamy, if I should care or not, or asking everyone, is it normal, all this, you know, daily. But then I realized, or I had to accept that my life is already a big contradiction, like where I come from, what kind of, you know, background I come from, and what kind of life I have now in Berlin as a free, independent woman. So I just had this urge to talk about these topics as well by using the ceramic panels. Actually, first I showed in Art Dubai, but like this swimming pool or this, the big one. And I started, doing works around censorship topic, which is really fascinating for me. Because when you say censorship, it doesn't come always from the government. It comes from your family, from your society, you know, like from your, could be friends. And I started censoring like super daily scenes, like for many people, they seem like really happy scenes, like kissing or swimming or a love poem might be censored by government, by families, by society, you know? So I like this contrast already, like building something really beautiful by like using many colors, but still talking about the really deep, maybe sad subjects like censorship. First, I actually censored a rainbow image like many years ago digitally as a response to government in Turkey when they wanted to censor rainbow products. And I wanted to censor rainbow as a response to show how beautiful it is and to underline its resilience. And then many years later, I visited Islamic Art Museum in Berlin. And then it's like seeing all these mosaic works there. Then I thought, oh, I could actually literally mosaic like all these, you know, images that I, like censored images by really mosaicing them, by really employing the real mosaic elements like ceramic tiles. And then this is how I started doing it. And many years later, it's really, I'm really happy about it. You know, Klaus Peter Halse, professor, the ex-director of Islamic Arts, he wrote an article about my work in this show, actually. And the title is Say It's Simple, But It Isn't. So he wrote a short article about my ceramic works. I'm really fascinated about it.
And when you say you did a show about your transformation, but what transformation do you mean?
Before talking about my own childhood traumas or my own pain of like becoming my own self at the moment, I created works more as a worldism, like, you know, like questioning all these paradoxes of daily lives, you know, like I could have been a British artist or, you know, Dutch artist or German. But at some point, I had the urge to talk about my real problems, you know, like being raised in a really religious and conservative background, for example, because I realized that people thought I'm coming from a privileged background or, you know, because this is how people see contemporary artists. And I somehow had the urge to talk about it. And in the swimming pool, for example, it is about, I don't know how you saw it, the swimming pool installation, but it's about...
Maybe you can describe it for those who didn't see it.
It is a censored, it is a sophisticatedly censored little girl in the swimming pool, which looks really nice because, you know, we all love blue, happy swimming pools. But actually, it is about societal and individual disharmony because, you know, in Middle Eastern countries, in Turkey, so many girls, they're not allowed to even swim. So for some, it's a really joyful scene. But for some people like me, it could be a big traumatic scene.
Because it's like an impossible projection. So, and it's a picture, it's a paint, sort of a tile painting, or it's like a like a image made of tiles on the wall of a pixeled...
It is on the floor, the swimming
pool.
It's
on the floor, and then it's like flat on the floor, and you see... How do you identify the figure as a girl?
Yeah, I was not even able to swim when I was a kid because instead I was going to have some religious educations during the summer school while my friends are going to pools, you know? So it is actually me.
As a dream, like as something you would have liked to do.
Yes.
And you can do now, but you couldn't do then.
Yeah, no, but... Yeah. Because the whole design of the show was about contradictions, I also employed a sound installation next to it, having designed by Alican Tezer, my musician friend. And the sound was having happy sounds of the boys enjoying the pool. Because, you know, in Turkey, I mean, of course, I mean, it's not just Turkey, it's my family. My family is really not, because there are so many secular families as well, of course. But, you know, I just wanted to show that while my brothers are enjoying it, I was not able to do so, you know? So this big contrast.
But, I mean, at the same time, what you say, it's like in one context, it's normal and in the other isn't, right? But this applies to a peer group, to a society, to a government. So can be very different in any different context, which we have the same here somehow. So we have sort of a certain censorship in certain societies or peer groups, which apply to us, because I was wondering when you said about your transformation, because I mean, somehow the art system also is very conservative and sort of, I think it gets better now than it was maybe 10 years ago, but it often dismissed people who did not have an art education, you know, like a classical art school background, but coming from, I don't know, but for example, Kippenberger, if I remember correctly, he had a window decorating education. But here in the other edition, there was a sort of an art market platform which only sells work of art students to sort of, I don't know, promise a certain context. You know, because, and that's, I find quite interesting because art is so difficult to put into a certain standards that even the art system itself tries to help itself by building categories of inclusion and exclusion.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to swimming pool, but then what I realized, it's not like what I realized, but, you know, it was my own problem. But it could be also like really traumatic for other people, like, for example, in South Africa, in the US during segregation era, you know, like black people were not allowed to use public swimming pools. Or when I, in last summer, when I was talking to John, you know, John Burgerman, this British artist, good friend of mine, when I was talking about this work, we also said and had to admit that it's also a class problem, like, it's also kind of traumatic for him, like seeing the swimming pool, because he was also not able to have a summer vacation like all his friends were able to do so, because he's coming from a working class family. So I think it's just a really, it's really fascinating for me, like this kind of like really beautiful scene and happy, you know, swimming pool could be a really sad story for many others with different variety of like reasons, yeah, various reasons.
And the whip, the what's the name?
Seesaw? The teeter totterous seesaws.
Yeah, they are also a representation of this, like not allowed to use, or more about the balance and.
Yeah, it's about like daily contradictions, and it's not about dichotomy, for example. It's not about like either or. Actually, the initial idea of this work, like Controversy Teeter Tortoise, I'm still working on it. I have a book project titled, once I showed you, actually, a couple of years ago, Contradictionary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
the book
like a dictionary.
Is out of
mm-hmm.
black and white and, you know, including all these contradictions, because I always thought I was bipolar. I thought, you know, one day I feel this way, the day after I feel totally opposite. One day I feel amazing, the day after I want to kill myself. So my therapist said, no, you are not bipolar, you're just having an artistic soul. That's it. So I just wanted to, you know, accept myself how I was. Okay, I'm not bipolar. I'm just having this, carrying this heavy artistic soul. Then I decided to play with these paints and just transforming them into art, also book, an artist book. And this is how I started while working on my I Was I Am show for Linz. I thought, I mean, I still couldn't publish the book, but I transformed them into interactive sculptures as seesaws. So I just also wanted to make the viewers part of my journey, because I know that so many people are having these contradictions. I am not the only one.
Yeah, yeah. But then when you use these tiles, is this a full conscious reference to your roots and background?
Yeah, for example, yeah, because it's not just a swimming pool. There was another one called Ecstasy. It was about auto-censorship, for example, the one we also showed together in Munich. It is about auto-censorship, because I just wanted to ask a question with that work, like how free a person could be if they come from a really non-free background. Because, you know, there are so many people migrating from Turkey to Germany now, as you know. You know, there's a big brain drain.
Of intellectuals leaving.
Yeah. It's kind of a reminder. It's not that easy to leave, because it is not just a physical thing you do when you migrate from A to B. It's also like the whole process, like psychologically, your identity and everything. It's not that easy to leave everything behind. Like now I'm having a totally like free life in Berlin. I'm really independent. I'm, you know, for example, it is a visualization of a freedom scene of Berlin. So I'm part of it now, but still I need to censor. Now there is no censorship for me, right? But still, now I started censoring myself towards my community, for example.
You mean because of your peer group?
Yeah, of course. It's not
the
that
people
easy.
Surround you.
No, people that I left behind.
Okay,
still my family
and how,
or
and
some.
And how so? Like where do you notice that you would do something, but then you hold back and don't do it?
Yeah, you know, there is some like societal norms and rules, and then you know that. You just don't want to share everything you do or you have. Like,
so because the work you refer to in Munich, this is two guys kissing, right?
It's not two guys. It's like four people.
Yeah.
The Munich, like it was four.
Maybe you can describe
different
it.
Different gender. It could be four guys. It could be two women, two men. So it is about, I think, gender norms. But it is definitely a scene of freedom. Scene in Berlin.
Yeah.
So.
But then sort of pixeled.
Yeah. It's also censored because it is auto-censored.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here actually, with that work, it was important for me to show the censorship not just comes from the government. It also comes by yourself sometimes. You know, sometimes we live in our own prisons, you know, in our own cages. So yeah, it's just kind of a reflection or just a message to show how there is a big contradiction between my past life and current life, actually.
And you think that chapter is sort of closed now with this exhibition, or is this something which is running through your work as a red line constantly?
Yes, because you know, the censorship topic is an endless inspiration to me. And, you know, I started censoring these motifs, like all the scenes, but one of my favorite versions of it was the poem that we showed together last in September, I think, right? Because the first time I got to censor a text rather than a motif. Yeah. So it's really Yeah, it's really interesting and exciting for me.
Because maybe you can describe this also. It's like a letter.
It is a poem.
Yeah, but it's written, right?
Yes.
And how did you, like, how what was the process there in how you did it?
Yeah, there's a really crazy process behind it because I think there are thousands of tiles, ceramic tiles. I mean, first I found a Sanskrit poem by Nazım Hikmet. And then
censored means this is not allowed in Turkey.
Yes.
Yeah.
He even had to exile from Turkey, as you know. But it was just a symbolic to me. I mean, I found this really censored poem, but it's also not really important which poem it was, because for me it's just a symbolic one, because so many poems or text scripts are still being censored by many different governments, countries in the world right now, or it used to be also in Germany, you know. So I chose one of those poems from him and then censor it by myself, like digitally. And then there are about 15 or 16 shades of grays. And then I started painting each tiles one by one according to all these shades, and then glued them also one by one. So it's like super handmade and hand painted.
Yeah. And like then it really becomes an abstract image.
Yes. And it was really funny because some people thought they were going to be able to read it when they get close. So I realized actually it's just two dimensional work, but still it could get interactive by this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like a blurred image, which looks more sharp from afar. And then it changes once you come closer. And so this is, so you're going to continue to work on this series. Or what to expect next from you? Like, what are you working on right now?
I also want to explore more with these works, with maybe, I'm also planning to censor some lyrics, some songs that were censored or, you know, or forbidden. I will continue on censoring different images. Now I'm also working on different images. Now I can't tell what they're about.
But interesting is that this, even the censored poem you could show in Turkey now, even the poem itself is censored, right?
Because it's censored. So actually it is a hack. This is what I did first in Art Dubai, because in Art Dubai it was a bit risky to show two people kissing.
Yeah.
You know?
But if it's blurred, it's fine.
Yeah. Then I'm like, yeah, actually, I hacked the, I always say that I hacked the fair by that.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, a friend of mine, she's a quite famous Turkish anchor woman. And she says that she has to be sort of careful or aware of how she positions herself in terms of criticism to Erdogan. Because, I mean, she has family in Turkey.
Yeah, on social media, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, because of course, here it's you can say whatever you want, but there are consequences to it, to relatives abroad, no? Because, I mean, also your parents, I guess, they look at what you're
indeed.
Doing, no?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we are all kind of like...
But how's your practice in Turkey? You aim for that? You want to show there and exhibit?
In Turkey?
Yeah, is that important to you?
Yeah, I mean, because of course there is an audience of mine, so I also have a feeling that I feel this responsibility sometimes to show something there, because I have a young audience. But yeah, I used to work with Planet, as you know, we don't work anymore. I'm just doing more independent stuff there in Turkey.
Yeah. I mean, it also has a very different art scene, no? There are no public museums. I mean, there are, but for contemporary art, it's pretty much privately run, no?
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, last year, I did 3 or 4 institutional shows in Germany, but nothing came from Turkey yet. I don't know. I think, yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's a different system, no? It's like they are museums for contemporary art, but they're pretty much on the shoulders of 3-4 families which involve themselves on a and then I think they are very much driven by a blue chip Western understanding of, I think has a lot to do with the market too. So this book you were saying, which you have been working on for some time, so how to imagine this? So you have like the contradictionary on it's like a double page and then like the seesaw, you have left and right, or how?
It's really simple.
Yeah.
It's a really simple graphic idea. It's like one page, the spread. Imagine a spread when you open the book. Left is white, right is black, something like that. And it's always the opposite feelings and thoughts.
And so how many of those?
So far, I have around 80 spreads.
Okay, wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I see it like in a museum shop, you know, next to cashier desk, like something small people just would buy. And I also created two covers of it, like one black and one white. So still even the cover has kind of contradiction. So I wish I could find a publisher, Verlag, and then I can do it eventually. Actually, Susanne Klein from Bundeskunsthalle, she loved it so much. She wanted to present it to Verlag. I'm going to tell you which one later.
And these, this, you have your special sort of, that's your handwriting, right? And you, and are you continue also to draw? Like, are you still doing drawings? And because I remember you did these garbage bags and the, your own tombstone, and that's often like sort of with your signature writing.
Yes, I do, but not as much as I used to do, to be honest. I want to go back to that. I mean, I don't want to forget doing it, to be honest, because now I'm pretty much excited about doing ceramics. I'm really obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think you moved away from your drawings?
I didn't move away. It's just...
just other direction for time being.
Yeah, it's just exciting for me. But no, I still do draw. I would never stop drawing. I mean... Mm-hmm.
And so, since when are you in Germany now?
Since 8 years.
8 years.
It's going to be 8 this December, yeah.
But I find it interesting that looking at these institutional projects you had, so that's like a core sort of base of our culture, you know, to have these very well-funded institutions. And I like this image of this seahorse on the roof of our Bundeskunsthalle, where also interestingly, it comes from when the government was still in Bonn. You know, it's like a relic of the past German West government. Anyway, so to look out for this book, which probably will come at some point. And what's the next project you can share with us?
I will go to Mexico in February.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Jose Azuro.
Yeah, yeah.
So
oh, yeah,
I will
of course,
do an art residency.
The Olymp of making tiles, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Ceramicus. So I will be doing an art residency at Ceramicus Azuro. And we said we are going to create a huge pool and to show it Plataforma finally in May.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact date at the moment, but it's going to be in May. So I'm really looking forward.
Okay, it's going to be a real pool,
yes,
which can be sort of,
yeah,
jumped into.
Yes, because normally I do paint on ready-made ceramic tiles. But this time we are going to create each of them as like terracotta, like read it, you know, and then they could be used also as a real swimming pool.
Nice. Image. I mean, this image of a pool is also such a, such a promise of also in art history, no? The pool as a symbol. Oh, great. So, but with a real goal to create an interactive sculpture, so to speak.
For me, it's like really, really important. But when I first like doing those interactive sculptures, such as like teeter totters, I also realized my work was already quite interactive. For instance, this rainbow, like censored rainbow work. It was first as a just fine art print. And then at a show of mine in Istanbul, someone just censored himself in front of it and posted on Instagram in front of the censored image just to embrace the resilience of this rainbow image.
Yeah.
A queer person, he just went there and just sat in front of it and just censored himself while posting on Instagram. So I realized...
Like pixeled his face.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I realized even a single two-dimensional work also could be interactive. So interactive doesn't mean functional, you know?
But also with a different perception, right? The far, how you behave or move around the picture changes, it's sort of interactive too.
Yeah, with the seesaws, they are going to be still, again, part of interactions, by the way, in 2025 as well. Two of them. So I think it's interesting to see people like enjoying them, and I hope they are also questioning about all these contradictions while using.
No, but that's what I like about them, that they what we noticed here when they were exhibited in the showroom, that sort of they're like social benches or social elements, you know, because they connect people who start then a dialogue and a conversation among each other, and before they didn't know each other, you know. So because often art is a very, I mean, you share sort of impressions, but you share experiences with people you don't know, but the interaction often sort of falls short. And here we were witnessing that people started to exchange, you know, and a dialogue started.
And more approachable. So this is how I see art and how I try to make my art, because, you know, as I mentioned before, coming from the small town in Turkey and a bit ignorant, so I always thought art belongs to these privileged people. You know, it's something distant and difficult to reach, and it belongs to others, you know. That's why maybe I try to do art which is more like it has big empathy and more approachable and time to time really accessible as well. I do my best with that. So this is, I think maybe that's why also the institutional spaces like museums like Bundeskunsthalle or Fürwerkswaage, they were interested in my art now, because maybe they also think or see that it's really approachable.
Great. Thank you so much, Ezra. We look forward to the swimming pool coming from Mexico. And we'll stay in touch and we'll closely follow. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.